I am Manuhiri in Ōtautahi. I have no obvious connections here, at least I didn't think I did. In the lead up to a research trip, I woke at 5 in the morning with a thought. The whales connect you, duh. I am going to meet the humpback whales, Pikea, on their journey back to their birthing waters. As this part of the world settles into winter, they migrate north from Antarctica, along the coastline of Te Waipo Namu, crossing Te Moana Nui Akiwa for the warmer waters of Vavau, Tonga. The whales I hold a growing affinity with have been making this journey since time beyond memory. I do have another ancient connection with Te Waipo Namu. Its people, Ngāi Tahu, and I descend from Pikea. In a few days' time, I will travel to Kaikoura, a feeding ground for the whales made abundant by a canyon holding nutrients from the deep sea, just offshore. The sun is descending as I fly over Ka Tiritiri o Te Moana, the Alps, but I face the east, towards Tauranga Moana, towards the islands of Samoa and Tonga. I face my own ancestral waters too. Before heading to Kaikoura, I need to come to know Ōtautahi. I gravitate to where I would in any unfamiliar place, its waters. The Awa Ōtākaro flows through the city's parks, under its bridges, becoming swampy again on its way to the coast. This river was once full of pātiki, tuna, and other kai for Ngāi Tahu to gather seasonally. It was part of a network of trails that provided Māori with a safe access route through the swampy marshlands of Ōtautahi. I decided I would meet the Ōtākaro by following its path on hīkoi. The hīkoi begins with my fingertips in the river and ends with my feet in the sea. A dip below the surface, the mirror of coming up for air. My first hīkoi is on one of those crisp blue and orange days, and piwaka waka follow me along the route. I start at the intersection of Cambridge and Hereford Streets, where the old public library and police station were. I had read that they were built on the urupā for Puari Pā. As I walk upstream, I pause at all of the plaques to see what they are commemorating. The river seems to have become a place for remembrance. Perhaps this is unsurprising for a city that has seen so much death in the past decade. I read plaques about captains, the Christchurch Beautifying Association, a flour mill, European towns I've never heard of, influenza, sergeants, military services, the end of wars, some I know of, others I don't. One plaque explains that a kōhatu pōnamu gifted by Te Runanga o Maka Āwhior was placed here, at an important threshold, and that touching the greenstone connects you back to the land and all those who have been before. The kōhatu pōnamu throws rainbows in the mist rising from it. I read notes left by loved ones at Oi Manawa, the Canterbury Earthquake National Memorial. Once I'm in the Botanic Gardens, I read a plaque about a brown trout hatchery and check my direction against signposts. At this point, I take a break. A lot can be said about a city that has to plant a New Zealand garden. I enter the museum in search of a bathroom, but clearly I look lost, so a guide hands me a map. She talks me through all the current exhibitions, pointing me to Edmund Hillary's boots and Kate Shepherd's dress. I ask about galleries 1 and 2, the ones she didn't mention. Oh, the Māori exhibitions. I head there first, only to find I already know these galleries from Treasures Left by Our Ancestors, a 2016 work by Ana Iti of Te Rarawa. I read the signs in the museum too, about whalers and how Christchurch was seen as the most English of all New Zealand cities. This was after the swamps were drained for a city to be built. I don't last long in the museum. I follow the Ōtākaro all the way to its source, past Waipapa, a place set aside by the Crown for Māori to meet and rest while travelling through Ōtautahi, such as in 1868 when 150 tangata whenua camped while making, ultimately unsuccessful, claims in the native land court. I read all the plaques, the information boards about colonial architecture, but I am interested in what these waters remember too. While spending several days following the Otakaro through the city on foot, I think about how to make art in places where you're manuhiri. As well as the many plaques, I come across Ngā Whariki Manaaki, the woven mats of welcome alongside the river. The 13 whariki are stone pavers arranged into weaving patterns by Morehu Fluti Henare of Ngāi Tahu, Rangitāne, Ngāti Kahununu, Ngāti Ruanui, Ngā Puhi Nui Tonu, Tainui, Ngāti Porou, and Reihana Tau Keith Parata, Ngāi Tahu, Ngāti Māmoe, Waitaha, Scottish. The signs read, in sequence, they reference the whakamanuhiri process of welcome for all peoples visiting Christchurch and support for the guiding principle of the rebuild for Ngāi Tahu, kia atawhai ki te iwi, care for your people. Unaware of the whariki manaaki when I started my hikoi along the river, I did not follow them sequentially. On my last day in Ōtautahi, I returned to the first whariki to begin the process properly, as it had been set out for manuhiri. My final hikoi along the Ōtākaro is deep purples, greens and auburn. The cloud will not lift today. Only 13 potential photographs remain on my roll of film, one for each whariki. At each of these woven with stone mats, I read the sign to understand which part of the whakamanuhiri process is being acknowledged and which patterns are used. I stay by the river a while and I make one photograph. To traverse whenua that holds as many layers as these islands do means I am constantly apprehensive about a misplaced foot. The more I learn the stories of my own whenua and what I can of the places I visit, the more apprehensive I become. A misplaced foot is inevitable in a settler colony that builds over bones and drains stories from the land in the hopes that we all forget their wrongdoings here. It is with gratitude that I follow Ngā Whariki Manaaki, the pathway laid out by Ngāi Tahu. The first time I saw a whale was off the coast of Nova Scotia, lands of the Mi'kmaq, overlaid with names carried from Scotland. I had travelled 28 hours on a train to reach the ocean from my temporary home of Toronto. I was awestruck by these unfamiliar cliffs, trees and creatures, but beneath the delight remained a well of sadness. This wasn't my ocean. As we looked out to a sea so expansive the horizon curved, something in the great stillness caught my partner's eye. Maybe it's incorrect to say I saw a whale, rather, I heard it. There was no spectacle, no majestic breach, just a few whales coming up for air, like stones skipping with vast intervals. I wonder now if they had come to collect me. My return home was imminent, but around this time I became ready to really return home, to finally begin the journey to understand who I am and where I come from, to acknowledge and honour my ancestors of the Moana. You see, it is not just the whales who, for generations upon generations, have followed these ancient oceanic pathways and formed webs of relations between fixed points. These are my ancestral legacies too. Kaikoura is a long way from Nova Scotia. I travel by aeroplane and rental car this time. I was especially hoping I might get to meet a humpback on their way to Vavau, their birthplace and that of my great-grandparents. It isn't long after setting out on Te Ao Marama, a whale-watching vessel owned by Ngāti Kuri, that we are sailing towards the first sperm whale, or Parawa. His name is Tiaki. We also meet Lazarus, Tiaki again, and Manu. They have all known these waters for at least as long as I've been alive. My fellow whale watchers and I are told you can tell who the whale is by the trailing edge of their tail. It starts off nearly straight, but acquires notches over the years. Tiaki, Lazarus and Manu had been feeding on deep sea creatures in the Kaikoura Canyon. They remain in the depths for around 45 minutes at a time before surfacing to breathe. Most of their bodies stay beneath the swells as they inhale, exhale, inhale again for 10 or so minutes. Then, more slowly than I expected, their tails lift. Water pours off the trailing edge, it flicks upwards, and they are gone. Most people turn away from the railing now, but if you wait, you will see a smooth circle of water appear on the surface, a trace the parawa left behind. I wish I could leap into the water, where I feel most at home, and follow them down the portal. I wish we could be eye to eye. We didn't see any humpbacks that day, but that doesn't mean they weren't there. And it's not just the paikia I am interested in anyway. I hadn't seen a parawa before, a great living and breathing body diving 1,000 meters undersea, but I do know their bones. My great-great-grandfather, a Jewish man who eloped with my Samoan great-great-grandmother, collected several hundred taonga and miasina across 40 years while trading general goods around the South Pacific and Aotearoa. For a time, many of these taonga and miasina adorned the walls of their family home, Uliula, big enough for 10 children and visitors from the islands, in downtown Auckland. Shortly before my great-great-grandmother's death, most of the collection was gifted to the Dominion Museum. Some of the taonga and miasina remained with the family or returned to the Māori queen, Te Ariki Nui Dame Te Ātairangi Kahu at Ngārua Wāhia. My great-grandfather, Samuel, was attempting to honour the spirit in which many of the taonga were gifted to his father by rangatira. One of the taonga now held by Te Papa Tongarewa is a hoi parawa, a paddle carved from the jawbone of a sperm whale. My family's story about the hoi is long and uncomfortable. This is not the place for that story, but part of my interest in whales emerges from a desire, or responsibility, to reconnect the taonga with its people. The legacies I have inherited through descending from settler-Indigenous relationships are full of such responsibilities. I suspect this might be my life's work, feeling for tears in the fabric of historical relationships and finding ways to mend them. Before I leave Kaikoura, I drive out to the site of a former whaling station, Waio Puka. I had been told of a house built from whales. The pink house atop a hill is not what I had imagined. You wouldn't know its foundations were bone. Fife House is closed today, but I still look past the fence to scattered fragments of skeletons. I don't stay here very long either. After the wonder of seeing the parawa that morning, I don't want to think of their oil lighting up Europe, or their vertebrae put together wrong and wearing the wrong flesh, the house of a Scotsman. I return to Ōtautahi and to the Ōtākaro. I have already walked along the banks to where the Awa rose. This time I drive out to where it becomes marshland once more. If you frame your eyes so that no buildings or cars peek through the grasses and trees, you can imagine Ōtautahi in the before. In truth, I am not all that familiar or comfortable with rivers. All of my rivers are on the other side of the world, and I am yet to meet them. But at some point, the fresh water of the Ōtākaro merges with salt. It is when the pathway turns to sand, winding between Te Kauka and Harakeke, and the smell of the ocean reaches me, that I know how to orient myself again. The hīkoi begins with my fingertips in the river, and ends with my feet in the sea.